I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division to order. Today is April 24th, 2020. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. I am State Representative Rick Hansen, and I have the privilege of chairing the House Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division this biennium. Members, just a few guidelines. As with any committee hearing, all committee discussion will continue to go through the chair. If you want to be recognized, please use the raise your hand button on your participants panel. For members on the phone, please use star nine, and that should activate a raise your hand symbol. And members, realize those that are on the phone, it may take a moment for their voice to connect into the Zoom meeting. If you are not getting called on, please send an email to Committee Administrator Pete Strohmeyer from your House account. Please mute yourself so we can reduce any background noise and maintain the quality of the presentation. All voting will be done by roll call taken by the committee legislative assistant. I should note that the minutes do not have to be done by roll call. They can be done by voice vote. Please try to limit the noise in your workspace during the roll calls. Members are expected to unmute themselves when voting and when called on by the chair. The CA and the CLA may mute members if their mute is left off and there is background noise. The clerk will take the attendance by roll. Clay.
Representative Hansen.
Here.
Representative Claflin.
Here.
Representative Fabian.
Here. Representative Tice may be a little late, just an FYI.
Thank you. Representative Backer.
He's checking in on the phone, too.
Okay. Is he not on yet?
To the best of my knowledge, he's not on yet, no.
I'll come back to him.
I'll double check, yep. He said he's on hold.
Please proceed.
Representative Becker Finn.
Here.
Representative Eklund.
Here.
Representative Fisher.
Here.
Representative Green. Representative Heintzman.
Here.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lewick. Representative Morrison.
Present.
Representative Nelson. Representative Purcell. Representative Sandell. Representative Sandell.
Present. Oh, sorry.
Representative Sundin. Representative Sundin.
Here.
Representative Tice will be here shortly. Representative Wilgenius.
Present.
Representative Backer. Representative Green. Representative Lewick.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Purcell. Present. 14 members present.
Quorum is present.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Jeff Backer says that we should be seeing him now. I don't know what's going on with the technology here.
Yep, Mr. Chair is...
Mr. Strohmeyer.
Is 320-695-2901. Is that Representative Backer?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. He is on the... I'm seeing he's on.
Okay, and I believe Representative Green just joined us.
So, Mr. Chair, are you going to mark them present, please?
Yes.
Yes, I have marked them present.
Are we missing anyone?
Representative Purcell.
Oh, he's here.
Chair Hansen?
Yes. Representative
Purcell? Yes, this is Purcell. I'm on.
So just Representative Tice, then.
Quorum is present. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. Representative Becker Finn?
I've reviewed those minutes and I would move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Becker Finn moves the minutes for April 21st, 2020. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The minutes are approved. Next item of business, I will move that House File 3657 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, this is the DNR policy bill. I have Bob Meyer here for questions on the bill. I'd also like to note that we have various DNR staff on the call to answer questions that may arise today. Ms. Linda Glazer from the Board of Animal Health is also available to answer any questions on the A7 amendment, and Mr. Tony Quillis is on the call to testify on the A7 amendment. Members, the bill has been posted. It went through the policy committee and resides in our committee. Are there any questions on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Becker Finn, I believe you have the A7 amendment.
Yes, I would move the A7 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Becker Finn moves the A7 amendment. Representative Becker Finn, would you please speak to your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just note at the forefront that obviously the way that we would have done our amendments would be a little bit different if we weren't legislating during a pandemic. So this is sort of this amendment has a couple different things in it. I will walk through those pretty quickly, and then I know that staff is available to answer questions, as well as members of our committee who are authors of some of the language originally that is now included in this amendment. So first included in this amendment is House File 4331, which was originally Chair Hansen's bill, and it regards escaped farmed cervidae and essentially allows, you know, if a hunter comes across a farmed cervid while they're hunting and shoots that deer, it holds them harmless and then requires that the owner of that deer would have to have it tested for CWD at the owner's expense. Also included is House File 3819, which was Representative Lisligard's bill that was heard in Environment Policy and approved unanimously regarding ATV tire inflation. Then House File 3703, which was Representative Marquardt's bill, also heard in Environment Policy previously regarding allowing a maximum amount of compensation for soil and water conservation district supervisors from $75 to $125. That hasn't been raised in quite some time. Also included is House File 4433, which was Representative Wagenius's bill regarding water use permits. House File 3180, which was Representative Claflin's bill, which was also heard in both Environment Policy, Commerce, and Environment Finance previously regarding PFAS chemicals in food packaging. Other provisions in the amendment are carry forward extensions to allow No Child Left Inside and the Emerald Ash Borer Response Grant Program, just extensions since things have kind of been put on hold right now for everybody. There's also some language regarding better accessibility for folks on WMAs, and this language was discussed in environment policy and also included in the Outdoor Heritage Fund bill that passed out of the Legacy Committee. And essentially, it's requiring the DNR to work with the Council on Disability to make sure folks have better access to WMAs. And then finally, there's House File 251, which was Representative Eklund's bill that was heard last year regarding Lake Vermilion and Sudan Mine State Park. So those are the provisions that are included in the amendment. Vast majority of the language is things that have already been out there and have passed out of other committees. And happy to take questions, but I know there's a couple testifiers as well.
I'd like to move to the testifiers to make sure they are able to get on the record. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We'd like to thank you for the inclusion of many of our policy provisions that we've been working with you on this session and this amendment and the rest of our bill as well. So I can answer any specific questions if members have them on any individual sections.
Members, do you have any questions for Commissioner Meyer?
Mr. Chair, this is Representative Lewick.
Representative Heisman, I'm going to go with Representative Lewick first because he's on phone, I believe, and then I'll go to you. So I'd like to go with Representative Lewick.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Several questions relative to the chronic wasting disease element of this amendment. One, how would the DNR handle the licensing, being how we do a certain amount of zone-based hunting? We've got different seasons that some are shorter, some are longer. What kind of licenses would the DNR be issuing since in order to carry out this hunting of escaped Cervidae farm deer, first thing is we'll have to be a licensed hunter. How does the DNR plan to do that?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Meyer.
Colonel Rodman Smith to help us answer those questions, please. I know he's available here.
Colonel Smith, if you could state your name for the record.
Colonel Rodman Smith, Director of Enforcement, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, my understanding about a licensed hunter would be, I think you're looking at line 1.17 to 1.19. It would be a licensed hunter under Chapter 97A, so it would be under an existing season framework. So we wouldn't be issuing special licenses for individuals to go shoot escaped cervid. It would be in relation to an already established season. And so if we have hunters out in the area and they see a deer that has a tag on, an ear tag on it while they're hunting normally, they'd be able to take that escaped cervid at that time. So we would not be issuing any escaped cervid special licenses or having special seasons.
Representative Becker Finn to the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that is the intent. There wouldn't be some special kind of season to go after escaped deer. The idea being we've had examples in the past where we've had hunters who are legally licensed hunters out and there have been escaped deer that were previously captive at facilities, and then there have been some issues about whether they could legally take those deer, and there was even an example last season where there was one of those sort of mutant bucks that someone took during the archery season, and then the person who had it escaped from their facility and didn't retrieve it was then upset with the hunter who was licensed to do, what hunters do. So that's the intent, is just to make sure that our hunters aren't going to be put at further liability when it's not their fault that we've got escaped, potentially diseased deer running around in the environment. And I know too, the fiscal note that we have was, the language is a little bit different than the language that's in in this amendment, but the fiscal note from the underlying bill noted that reported escapes from the state's 10,600 registered farm cervids number approximately 100 animals per year, and then currently went on to say that the current escalating trend in escaped cervids and CWD incidents will continue into the future for at least the next several years. And so that's what we're trying to deal with, and making sure that, you know, outside the fence, we've got some different rules, and that that's how it should be as we deal with a species that is, you know, one of the really the only species that is both farmed as livestock and also a protected natural resource in our state.
Representative Lewitt.
Follow up with Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Meyer. Is there concern that this could touch off kind of a vigilante approach in some areas? This like a you know, no consideration for trying to get the deer back. It basically wipes out a bunch of stuff that certainly puts the onus on the deer farmer. Any concern about this being the kind of thing that some some folks may take advantage of and turn into sort of a vigilante approach? There's quite a bit about that in some areas toward anybody farming cervidae right now. Let's do away with them.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Lewick, this language right now isn't too far off from current law. And I can, again, I'll defer to Colonel Smith, but currently after a deer has escaped, I believe it's after 24 hours, but I'm not quite sure, a person is able to harvest that animal if it's escaped. So, Mr. Chair, if we could again go to Colonel Smith for clarification on that current situation.
Colonel Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Commissioner Meyer is correct. After 24 hours, the escaped animal could be dispatched or put down by folks. And so this isn't really much of a change. You know, it is escaped cervid, so it's not a wild animal. And so we have had some instances where a hunter has harvested an escaped cervid, and we don't get in the middle of that. That gets to be more of a civil issue between the hunter and the producer. And so this language is not too far off from what's kind of currently going on. Just gives it much more clarification.
Representative Lewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. Well, and that begs the question, does the DNR feel this is absolutely something they have to have? If the language is so similar and provides for taking a appropriate approach right now, is this something that is just that we should be doing in the middle of a COVID emergency, trying to legislate on this kind of wordsmithing?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Lewick, while I understand your concern on the COVID front, the disease that we're fighting within the wild deer population and in the farm cervids is a serious issue as well. I think clarifying this for the hunters out there and also making sure that producers realize that if their animals are escaped, they are, you know, for lack of a better term, fair game. So it will help the producers understand how important it is to avoid an escape, and also clarify for people out in the field that this is an animal that should be taken down.
Lewick, anything else?
Yes, a little more follow-up. I appreciate Assistant Commissioner's Meyer's comments, but I can assure you that the cervidae farmers do understand the importance of an escaped animal, and I don't think we need this type of language to remind them of that. I'd like to go on, though, to an issue here, and maybe the Department of Board of Animal Health may better be able to answer this. Do we believe it's possible to view a phone number, address, and maybe the owner's name on an ear tag and an animal the size of a deer at 50 yards. That's 2.5 through lines 2.7. Or incorporate global positioning system apparently into the deer ear or underneath their skin. That's new technology as far as I can see. And again, Board of Animal Health is probably appropriate to answer that. They're very familiar with tagging.
Dr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair and representatives, this is Linda Glazer, Assistant Director with the Board of Animal Health. Our statutory and requirements also reiterated in our rule indicate that all farm servants have to be identified with official identification, and that means an identification that is unique to that animal within into livestock within the United States. So that's required, as well as it for an identification to be visible at 50 yards. Typically, with a bangle or plastic ear tag, that can be done other than, you know, under cover of heavy vegetation, certainly.
Representative Lewick.
As one who's very familiar with that type of an ear tag in livestock, it's quite a bit bigger than an average deer. Those are prone to frequent loss, even in fairly open pastures, and obviously deer would approach cover and that type of thing in a different manner than a livestock cattle, for example, would approach. So, and this business about a global positioning system technology, do we have that type of stuff that's in common use amongst producers right now with animals that the Board of Animal Health is involved with?
Dr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair and representatives, in regards to the question for GPS, no, there is no current identification available that would incorporate GPS location into that technology into an ear tag. And also, you are correct that certainly farm servants, along with other livestock, keeping tags in the ear can be problematic. And so we are continually working with producers to, you know, they have to keep their animals tagged. If they lose tags, they have to re-tag them. They have to connect the old identification to the new one so we can continue to identify that individual animal. But that is something that certainly happens, and we continue to, you know, the producers have to continue to work on that on an ongoing basis to keep the animal identified. We encourage two forms of identification in animals, and partially for that reason. If you lose one tag, you'd have another one left in the ear that could serve as a backup identification.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just kind of summarize here. Again, we're in the middle of a pretty serious emergency. We're trying to legislate stuff that at this point, at best, is really, I think, frankly, unnecessary. And particularly since this bill is now apparently headed for Ways and Means, you're going to play with animal tags of any kind that should be going back through the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee, for starters. And again, I just see this as unnecessary and taking advantage of an emergency situation just out of character with what I understood we should be doing here, and that's focused on, you know, immediate emergency situation. So I'm a little frustrated that we're even dealing with this portion of the amendment. I've heard the comment in the dark of night more than once on the House floor, and I'm unfortunately afraid that we're doing this and over the telephone and the internet line and not out there where we could get really full public discourse on the ramifications of continuing to tinker with something that doesn't need to be fixed. Thank you.
Representative Becker Finn, the author of the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, to the comment of the idea that we're somehow taking advantage of an emergency situation, we still need to do our jobs. And there are all kinds of things where many hours in the day, and you know, addressing CWD, it's deer, really, cervids are the only other species dealing with a very serious outbreak of a disease in our state right now, other than humans. And I actually think the public is paying even more attention to how we deal with outbreaks of disease right now. And so there's no taking advantage of anything. And in some ways, I actually think by doing these hearings with the ability for people to call in from different locations, in some ways, there's actually more ways for members of the public to participate in these hearings now than when we require folks to come all the way down to St. Paul and pay for parking and wait around all day to participate in our hearing. So the idea that this is somehow some nefarious way of hiding things from the public is that's not what's going on here at all. We're live streamed right now. This is going to be recorded. There's plenty of time for this process to happen. And that's what's going on here. As far as the comments about tagging, this is actually interesting. This is the first time we've talked about this frequent loss of tags. And so that's why we need to look at different mechanisms of keeping track of these animals. You know, just a quick Google search while the representative was talking. There's all kinds of RFID tags and different tags. I know my own pet dogs are microchipped, and there's the ability to keep track of things that way. So the technology's out there. It's just a matter of wanting to keep it up to date. And I do think, you know, to get back to what the, you know, I know we have a couple testifiers or one other testifier, but as the DNR said, this isn't too much far off from what we're doing right now. But I think that our hunters do deserve to have some clarity here to make sure that they're not dealing with, as Colonel Smith talked about, this sort of civil issue when, you know, they haven't done anything wrong. They're not the ones not tracking their escaped animals. You know, and frankly, if folks who are breeding these animals truly understand how important this is, I don't know why we have hundreds of escapes and we continue to have this be an ongoing issue. So clearly it is important. This is another infectious disease that we're dealing with. And I think it's important that we deal with it now and not just put it off because it's not directly related to COVID-19.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make just a brief response to one thing that was said.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Representative Becker Finn's comments. I would like to point out, though, as one who has watched for almost 20 years trying to do RFID tagging and with livestock, that RFID tag, that insert under the skin that she referred to with her pet, you have to have a wand to read that, and you have to be very close to it. So let's be cautious and understand that the little implant you put in your pet is very unique, and one doesn't give you locator identification, and you have to have a wand literally within inches to a foot or two to even be able to find it. So please don't anybody misunderstand what kind of tag that is. Thank you.
Representative Heinzman, and then Representative Fabian, then Representative Green, and then Representative Sandel. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Commissioner Meyer is still here, and we were allowed to ask him a few questions. So the number one question that I wanted to hear from him right away on was, is this an agency priority? Is this something that DNR is asking for? Is this your language, or is this something that is different?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, I believe Representative Becker Finn had the House file number that was referred to this section. This was not an agency bill, one that we were working with the author on to address concerns.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I thought I heard the Board of Animal Health folks were on the line, and I'm not sure if I heard that correctly. Is that the case? Yeah, I see you nodding. Okay. The other question I had then was, are we doing something very unique, or are there other examples of this kind of language being out there? I'm thinking of an example like if, say, we had an outbreak of bovine tuberculosis. Is there a sort of a shoot-to-kill order out there for cows that may be suspected of having escaped during a outbreak of some other kind of disease? Or is there an example of this anywhere else in the agriculture world?
Dr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair and representatives, as far as our other livestock programs, your phrase of is there a shoot to kill order? No, not that I'm aware of. Certainly, other animals, if they're diseased, we do quarantine those animals. They're not allowed to move freely, except, with perhaps permit from the board. So there's that sort of enforcement that's placed for any animals we either suspect or are confirmed with disease.
Representative
Heintzman. Follow-up, thank you, Mr. Chair, on that with the board. Do you have the numbers, Dr. Glazer, of escaped animals, let's say, in 2019, just to give folks an idea of the scope of this problem as it's being discussed here today?
Dr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair and representatives, yes, I do. I've tallied escapes we've had since I took over the program, and we have numbers of animals as well as the events. So we've had an event can have more than one animal escape, and then we track whether the animals are returned and whether they're killed, and ultimately how many animals are lost. Actually, 2019, that state fiscal year is how we reported that information. And 2019 was an exceptionally high year, and we had 99 animals escape. And when I looked at that, we had three cases of vandalism in farm servant herds where the locks were cut or gates were removed from hinges, and 42 of those 99 animals were related directly to those three acts of vandalism. So, that was an unusually high number. In the previous years, we've had a couple of years with 60 animals escaped. And I can go to the data that I have on that. Typically, we get 75 to 90% of those animals either are returned or killed. And then some of those are lost. In other words, we don't recover them and they're not returned to the pen or harvested.
Thank you for that, Dr. Glazer. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my next question, I guess, would be for Representative Jamie Becker. So I'm wondering, this language that you have here in front of us today, Representative Beckerfin, is this something that we've been working with stakeholders? Did they give you any feedback on this? Any other solutions or options that might avoid the scenario that we're looking at here in the language, that immediately after a deer may potentially have, for example, in the case of a fence being vandalized and no fault of their own, their livestock being immediately shot by a potentially a hunter, or who knows what the other scenarios might be? Is there any sort of compromise or solutions that they might have presented to you?
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My focus is on good policy and on actual hunters. I'm not really interested in sort of, following this sort of who has a lobbyist at the Capitol idea of who stakeholders are here. My focus is trying to do good policy to try to do more to stop the spread of chronic wasting disease. And unfortunately, it hasn't gotten as much press because we've been dealing with our own human pandemic, but the increased cases and sort of bad actor captive cervid owners, we have continued to be in the news. We continue to have that be an issue. And so I do think we need to do more. I think this is actually not that big of a change from current law. And again, the idea is to make sure that that hunters, we're talking about licensed hunters. So again, like the sort of this comment about other livestock, we don't have licensed wild cow hunting. We don't have licensed wild horse hunting. It's unique, and that's why the language that we talk about and why this continues to be an issue, because this is a very unique situation where we have the same species on one side of the fence as the other side of the fence. Mm-hmm. And on one side of the fence, it's something that makes money for folks. And on the other side of the fence, it is a protected natural resource. And so I think that's why, we kind of have some unique, potential solutions to deal with this ongoing issue.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the follow-up. So, Representative Becker-Finn, would it be safe to say that you didn't seek out any stakeholder input as you were putting this language together? Because that's what I'm hearing.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I want to clarify that the underlying bill is actually Chair Hansen's bill. I just want to clarify that. So I'm not the only one thinking about these things. There's several other people signed on to that bill as well. And no, I don't, this idea that like only people designated as the stakeholders are the ones who get to weigh in. Have I talked to lots of other deer hunters about this issue? Yes, absolutely. Both on hunter forums online with the folks that I know, both constituents, friends and family who hunt. Actual people who deer hunt care a lot about this issue, and I have talked to them.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, really. Just a few minutes ago, Representative Jamie Becker, you were talking about our responsibility during the world pandemic and that we still have to do our job. And I think that we've all been around this lawmaking job long enough to hear oftentimes how important it is to engage all the stakeholders on an issue. And I myself have been guilty of not doing that at times. And I feel like this is an example of where if we're going to get good policy and get good answers, we do need to hear from everybody, not just one side of the issue, the deer hunters, which I am a part of. My entire family is deer hunters, my kids included, my wife. We're all deer hunters. We all have something at stake here. I think most of us, I'm saying, at the table are deer hunters. But on the other side of the coin, we also have people whose livelihoods are at stake. And at a time when people are losing their livelihoods, we're taking a very serious issue relevant to this industry because it is a business around the state. And we're creating a situation where vandals could literally break into a facility. As we heard earlier, 42 deer escaped due to vandals in 2019. And then immediately hunters could take up an opportunity to just shoot all those deer and no burden at all to try and recover the animals under this language. And so I would think that it would be part of our job and part of getting good policy passed for us to do our due diligence. And I hear the bill or the provision author or authors saying that nobody was sought out from the cervid industry to consult to try to find some kind of a compromise, some kind of a solution, because you know that people are going to be adversely affected by this, no fault of their own. And I get the gravity of the issue. I think we've been talking about the problems due to CWD for long enough that we all understand this is an important issue. It's dangerous, and we need to be taking it very seriously, and I think we are. And I think that this is an attempt at doing that, but without getting input from everybody that is going to be affected, I just don't understand why it's being brought forward today.
Members, and Representative Fabian, I think you were next. I would ask if we actually have one of the stakeholders testify. He's been waiting patiently for about 45 minutes, and then that we proceed, and Commissioner Meyer is still available for questions. Representative Heinzman, would that be okay?
That would be fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Quillis?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to provide some testimony today. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to start out by wearing my Minnesota Elk Breeders Association hat and point out a couple of things in the A7. As pointed out, right now, under a current escape, you have 24 hours to notify the Department of Natural Resources. And also, right now, language is in law and is being deleted that the DNR must allow the owner to attempt to capture the escaped animal. And that's being deleted, Mr. Chairman. So the notification changing from 24 to immediate and us not being allowed to recapture the animal, Mr. Chairman, is of concern. But also, if one would escape, which I was questioning the number of hundreds of escapes, Mr. Chairman, and I think Dr. Glazer had confirmed that there are smaller than hundreds, but if one of them would escape during a hunting season, those animals are worth thousands of dollars, at least for the folks I represent, the elk breeders. Those animals are worth thousands of dollars, and we would not be compensated if one of them would somehow get out and then be shot by a licensed hunter. We would at least like to be able to get the animal that would we would like to get back that we helped raise and spent money on. And like I said, they're worth thousands of dollars. And then finally, on that first section, Mr. Chairman, where it talks about any escaped cervid killed by a hunter or by the commissioner must be tested, and then the test must be paid for at the owner's expense. We want to be involved in that testing. It's our animal. We need to know if there's CWD in it. The tests that we do are called IHC tests, immunohistochemistry tests, and they're known as the gold standard. And I'm not sure what the DNR uses. I think they might use what's known as the ELISA test. But we want to be involved in that testing process because we want to know if that animal had CWD in it, and we want to have input into that test. If we don't, the other thing that I'd like to point out, Mr. Chairman, it's at the owner's expense. And if there is a cost to us that involves us, and whether the DNR says, here's what it costs in staff time, here's what it costs in transportation, here's what it costs in postage, and we'd like to challenge that, there's no process there that we would be able to challenge that invoice at the owner's expense. So those are just a couple of things I'd like to point out in regards to that first section. In terms of the second section, 2.3 down to 2.20, to be a part of the Minnesota Herd Certification Program, you have to be able to move animals. You have to have two ear tags, one state, one federal. And I just wanted to point out that those are checked visibly every year by the Board of Animal Health, along with a federal U.S. DA. And they're audited every 3 years to make sure that those books are checked and corrected. And it has been touched upon also about the GPS system. That technology that my research that I've done is only available in collars, Mr. Chairman, is not available in tags. And the tags, as pointed out by Dr. Glazer, that are used by us are unique to that individual animal. If you wanted to call the Board of Animal Health or the USDA or the local vet, they would be able to identify that animal immediately through those tag numbers because they are unique to that individual animal, Mr. Chairman. So I just wanted to point that out on those two sections, and I appreciate your time allowing me to comment on that. Mr. Chairman, while I'm here, and then I can mute and go off, just can I change hats and do my Chamber of Commerce on two other sections of the bill?
Proceed, Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, the other ones that I'd like to point out, just a couple of questions are House File 4433, as Representative Becker Finn mentioned, in their Representative Wagenius provisions dealing with groundwater, Mr. Chairman, and talks about a new standard for public hearings dealing with a quarter million gallons per day in a 30-day period. We're just curious, Mr. Chairman, about the fiscal implication would be to the Department of Natural Resources on that. And then also, who would be affected by that? What industries? And my glance at just looking, unfortunately, my statistics are sitting in the office, but my glance, if I remember correctly, at ground and surface water users, these public meetings would have to be held for any utility, city, food processing, paper mills, taconite plants, irrigators, and refineries, I think, are all the main users that would be cost, that would be triggered into that, Mr. Chairman, in those public meetings. And in terms of, probably, I think I saw Mr. Meckel on to ask how many under the vintage groundwater provision, how many permits and watershed districts possibly would be affected by that. And then, Mr. Chairman, on the final part of that, regarding the sustainability standard, the groundwater use must be sustainable. The definitions that I've looked up under sustainable, Mr. Chairman, would include the aquifer being replenished. So the question there, I guess, to the agency or Representative Wagenius would be, what under sustainable do we need to have to draw out and that's not covered under the sustainable definition up above in line 3.27, Mr. Chairman? And then finally, on the food packaging and PFAS, I've had this test. I gave you this testimony in policy and finance, and the bill is currently sitting in the Health and Human Services Policy Committee. No other state in the nation has this regulation, Mr. Chairman. The PFAS in food packaging is heavily regulated by the federal government, and Maine and Washington has done something similar to this, but they have a number of alternatives in there, identifying safer alternatives, readily available, the product must be comparable costs, must be only fiber-based products, and they have an extensive public engagement process, which lacks in this portion of the bill, Mr. Chairman. And then finally, I want to thank you for your time. The effective date goes in automatically on January 1st. There's no provision in there, what we call the manufacturer retail lag. And so I just wanted to point that out, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate you allowing me to state my opinions and comments on the A7 amendment. And I'll stick around if there are any comments or any questions I can answer. But thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm going to go to, I want to get Representative Fabian in, and then I'll go to Representative Becker Finn to answer the specific questions. I assume we are still on CWD, Representative Fabian, or would you like to multitask on other issues as well?
Well, I just became a grandpa again, too, so that's multitasking.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm texting with my son. Anyway, on CWD, I have a question for maybe DNR or Board of Animal Health with regards to the vandalism that Dr. Glazer talked about. I'm wondering about an investigation into that and if anybody has been charged and what the ramifications are of that investigation.
Dr. Glazer?
Mr. Chair and representatives, I know that the producers, for two of the situations, filed police reports, and so I know they were investigating that, but I'm not sure what the outcomes of those investigations were.
So maybe, thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. So maybe this is for Colonel Smith. What would be the penalty? What's the crime? What would be the charge if someone was found to be vandalizing property in this case?
Colonel Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, this is the first I've heard of this vandalism. I guess it would be some type of damage to property, so depending on what they did with the vandalism, you know, how much damage fiscally it was to the fence or the gate or however they damaged the property, and then it'd be probably up to the county attorney to decide if the animals were affected, the value of the animals and whatnot. So there could be some criminal charges, could be, you know, depending on the dollar amount, it could be a misdemeanor, it could be a gross misdemeanor, it could be a felony, depending on how much fiscal damage was done to the facility.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my understanding in listening about what's going on in the cervid industry, some of those animals are worth, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. if there's, I believe, 42 animals that have escaped, it's pretty conceivable that there's a few hundred thousand dollars in valuation there. If those animals are lost and killed, that could be a pretty serious penalty for somebody who is involved in vandalizing, correct, Colonel?
Colonel Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, you're correct.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would that raise to a felony level, Colonel?
Colonel Smith.
Mr. Chair, it could, depending, or Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, it could, depending on the dollar amount. So, yes, it could easily get to a felony level.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, my other question, and a lot of questions have been asked, what's the fiscal impact of the CWD portion in the bill? I haven't seen a fiscal note that I remember on your bill, Mr. Chair. If there's something that I've missed, I apologize, but walk us through the fiscal note or whatever, and then I need to hear from DNR. If there's not an appropriation, because to the best of my knowledge, we don't have a target yet, how are they going to cover the expenses in this?
Representative Becker Finn, I believe you have the fiscal note in front of you.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So the fiscal note was sent out by the committee administrator and is posted on our House website. It has been available. And just to clarify, that's where I got the approximately 100 animals per year is from the fiscal note. So I assume fiscal staff got that from one of our agencies. I'm not, you know, not sure exactly where that came from, but that is what's in the fiscal note. The other problem sort of with the fiscal note is that the fiscal note doesn't have the doesn't include the date that we have in this amendment. So the fiscal note is the original underlying language that was in House File 4331. It does have in biennium 2021, it has a cost, but I think under our language, you'd be pushing that out. And then they have a general fund 425 in 22 and in 23. Although I will say for the record that I question the accuracy of this based on the comments from the DNR already, that this is basically what they're already doing. So I'm not sure exactly where that additional cost is coming from if this is already their practice.
Commissioner Meyer, to Representative Fabian's question.
Mr. Chairman, members, if you look at the fiscal note, it's based upon the hours of activity required to deal with an escaped deer. So obviously, as Colonel Smith said, we weren't aware of those recent vandalism escapes, what occurred there. But, and Colonel Smith can elaborate more on this. In the fiscal note, it involves a team effort of officers and staff on the ground and other services such as air support to locate and destroy escaped servants. We assume 50 hours of conservation officer time per escaped incident. And then that's at $85 an hour. So, again, it takes a lot of effort to deal with these things when they're escaped. It's, as anybody knows, in the field deer hunting. It's a labor time intensive endeavor. And the fiscal note is based upon hours of activity on an average times the number of escaped deer. So I think Representative Becker Finn was right on saying that it's kind of scalable depending on the number of deer we see. And right now, Colonel Smith can chime in if we need to. These costs, unless they're covered out of the general fund appropriation we received last year, typically come from the licensed deer hunters, the Game and Fish Fund that is out there right now.
Representative Fabian.
No, I'm good, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Green first, and then Representative Sandell. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I apologize for being a little late. Something with my internet kept me loading but not coming on. But I do have a question for the Department of Health. With the nearly half of the deer on those three incidents, can you tell me how many of those deer were recaptured?
Dr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair and representatives, yes, let me go to my information. So I was just looking at this was through state fiscal year 19. We had in one case, there were 13 animals in one incident, and 7 of those were recovered, and 6 of those were killed. In the other one, we had 14 animals escape. We had 3 animals escaped, and all 3 were returned. In the other incident, there was 15 animals that escaped, and 13 were returned, and 1 was killed. So in all of those, we had just 1 animal that was lost.
Okay. And so, but then, excuse me, Mr. Chair. So then 6 or 7 then were killed because of this vandalism, and the owners of the farms then got no compensation for that, I assume. Is that correct?
Dr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that is my understanding. We would not be able to compensate them, so I don't believe anybody did, but that's not something that we track either. So I can't think of anybody that would be there to compensate them.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then the rest of my questions have probably been answered, but I do have a comment that this really is not workable from start to finish. I don't know of any other area of law where we would take someone's livelihood, even if something happened that was no fault of their own, and say you have no chance to recoup any of this, to take away the 24-hour period and to just say once those animals hit that fence, even if a storm comes by and drops a tree on them, or if someone cuts a fence open or cuts the lock off that fence, is just it's almost unbelievable to me that we would be passing a law that would allow that. And then just a quick note on page 2 on the identification tags. Representative Lewick was right. I mean, you would at 150 feet, you're just not going to be able to read someone's name and address off that tag unless it was a huge tag. Now I realize that probably the identification on that tag is not would be used after the animal was down. However, in the law, the way that I'm reading this language, it says here, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you have to be able to read that from 50 yards away. Is that correct? Anybody?
Representative Becker Finn, as the author of the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Dr. Glazer had already answered that question earlier, but it's possible. The other thing with this is that we're talking about deer hunters here. And I don't think that piece is going to be a problem. And certainly, we're going through the committee process. And if folks aren't happy with this language, there will be opportunities to continue to work on making sure that it's a workable option. But, I think Dr. Glazer had already addressed that earlier.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, no, I don't think that she did, because that wasn't my question. As far as being able to see a tag, you can see a colored tag, and if you know the identification of that color, or maybe a number on that tag, then you personally could do that. What I'm saying is that according to this language, if I'm reading it properly, this says that when you tag that deer, whoever is looking at that deer has to be able to read that tag from 50 yards away. That's what it looks like it says to me. So if that's the case, this language on its face is just not workable. But that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions refer to House File 4433. The committee brief said that the bill hadn't been heard before other committees and would be discussed here. I wonder if you want to continue with the discussion of CWD or maybe come back to my questions later.
I would like to move on the questions. We have a half an hour left of time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the intent of the bill. And I represent a suburban district with a great number of development. And am I still on here? Can you still hear me?
Yes.
And I wonder if the bill was written with the intention of either regulating or paying attention to the kind of rapid development, which is occurring in southeastern area of our metro, the southeast corner of our metro area, and I imagine others as well.
Representative Guinness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, let's look at the basic here. Minnesota law, like the law in many other states, says that all Minnesotans, are entitled to their fair share of groundwater. And that's their drinking water. And protecting drinking water is our state's number one priority. And DNR is charged with making sure that everybody gets their fair share. And we know that groundwater is under tremendous stress right now. And so what this language does is give citizens a bit of oversight. And when we're dealing with very high volumes of taking groundwater, and it gives DNR some additional tools to protect groundwater. So we need DNR to have all the tools necessary to do that. So basically what this bill does is add a few tools to the toolbox and allow us to assess where it's safe to pump very high volumes of groundwater and when and where using very high volumes of groundwater will either contaminate groundwater or deplete local groundwater sources. It's just the further tools in the toolbox, and I can talk about individual tools if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. I certainly support the bill. Appreciate you bringing it forward, and I think it's really important. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to have the discussion here. I think the underlying bill is a good bill, and I think that these provisions will make it better, and appreciate members' support. I will also note for the record that my name is Representative Becker-Finn. I've served with many of you for 4 years now, but did want to make sure, since that seemed to be an issue on today's hearing.
Representative, I couldn't tell whether Representative Fabian or Representative Green went on first. Representative Green?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question on the amendment starting on 3.18. We're creating a whole new definition for groundwater in here. And I looked up a few things on tritium, but I'm wondering if the author of this portion of the amendment could explain to me what tritium really is and where it comes from.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Tritium is, I would guess, I could call a residue of atomic testing many, many years ago. And it was a one incident thing, and it got into our groundwater. It got every place, but into our groundwater. So it's very easy for scientists to measure how old, and generally when groundwater is old, it's also clean. It's very easy. It's a very clear measurement of good groundwater. And so that's where tritium comes from. That's why we call it vintage instead of old, but that's just a choice of words. So if you're testing for good groundwater, it's an easy test. It's about $50. And what was your other question? Oh, I know that we're making great changes. That's not true. If you look at on page 3.24, we already have a sustainability standard in statute. And this actually just implements that further. It does not change the sustainability standard.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, some of the stuff that I did read, Representative Wagenius, is that tritium does occur naturally, and it occurs when ultraviolet light or sun rays, I guess, come in contact with nitrogen, and it's in the air, and there's a certain amount of it that occurs naturally. Am I reading that right?
Representative Wagenius.
When I have talked to geologists about tritium in groundwater, and that's what we're talking about right now, there is a measure, there is an amount of tritium, which is very small, in groundwater that is old, and older would be cleaner. And of course, we're trying to protect our clean groundwater. So toward the surface, and you're getting rain, yes, you may have, there may be more tritium getting in, and that is the issue here, is more surface water that is more polluted getting into the deeper, cleaner groundwater.
Representative Green.
Well, thank you, but you're saying two different things, I think, because first you're telling me that the tritium only occurred one time years ago, but now you're saying more could be getting in. And so I'm wondering which it is.
No, there was this one thank you, Mr. Chair. There was this one incident many, many years ago, and I think it was in the 50s, but somebody can correct me on that, where there was atomic fallout, and it shows up in our groundwater at a small amount when it is very deep, and it has been used by geologists for a long time as a measure of how old that water is. So newer water will have more tritium in it because it's closer to the surface.
Representative Green.
Well, I'm not sure that that's really correlating with what I'm seeing here, but as long as we're continue to go down the list here, if you go down a little further on that, and this could be for the author or whoever put this part in, but it talks about when determining whether consumptive use of groundwater is sustainable, the commissioner must make determination at the level of recharge of the aquifer. And basically it goes to how it's going to impact and meet the future needs of future generations. Can the DNR tell me how they do that? How are they going to look into the future and see what the needs of future generations are?
Representative Green, are you asking for the DNR to answer?
Yeah, I'll ask for the DNR.
Mr. Meckel, and if you could announce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jason Meckel, I'm the Section Manager, Department of Natural Resources. I'm not turning my video on because I'm...
We don't have the video, but we don't have the audio, Mr. Meckel.
In East Metro, for the area around Bonanza Valley, we've developed them around Little Rock Creek and Cold Spring. And essentially what we're talking about here
Mr. Chair, can you ask him to start over his answer, please?
Yes. Mr. Meckel, we were unable to hear the entirety of that. If you could
start over. I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, I'm having internet issues. I apologize. We use groundwater models to determine the amount of recharge. It's essentially developing a water balance for a given geography of the state. And we're doing that in places where we're experiencing some of the greatest use of groundwater, parts of the Twin Cities and some of our agricultural areas around the state.
Representative Green?
Well, you're telling me how you're gauging it now, but it says here you're going to have to determine the needs of future generations, and I'm wondering what you have in place to look into the future and determine that.
Mr. Meckel.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Green, in the case of the Twin Cities area, what we are using is population growth projections for the communities. So we project forward what they anticipate the volume of water will be needed. And we do that as far as the plans for population growth go, which is about 2040, to some extent, maybe 2050. But in the rest of the state, you know, what we have to go on is what's the current level of use and whether or not there's anticipated future increases. But we, as you're indicating, don't have a crystal ball about exactly what that will be.
Representative Green, I believe Representative Wagenius, as the author of that section, would like to answer.
Okay. Representative Green, if you'd look on line 3.27, current law actually says that the commissioner must determine that groundwater use is sustainable to supply the needs of future generations. That's current law. What we're adding here is a more clear definition of what sustainable is, and that is to make sure that there is a recharge available.
Representative Green?
Well, we could get into long discussions on that, but I know we're going to run out of time. But the recharge on the aquifers is comes from rain for the most part, so or for all from all parts, I guess. So I don't know how you're going to be able to do that unless you can predict the weather years to come. And there's other issues here too, Mr. Chair, and I hate to keep jumping around, but on the PFAS for food packaging that is in here. Now, we did hear this in policy committee, and it was really, really not ready for prime time. If this goes in this bill, from talking to the manufacturers that I have, this could potentially empty the shelves faster than COVID-19. So the wording in the language for the PFAS is also very unworkable. But I think that this whole amendment to take the bill that you had, which was basically non-controversial for the most part, and add this to it's going to be very troublesome. So thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, I'm concerned about the provisions in the bill that Representative Wagenius is just talking about. When you require a public meeting for large water users, I'm curious if someone, DNR or whatever, can tell me if it's who are the large water users, obviously municipalities, some of our utilities possibly, the mining industry, the paper industry, over here, the sugar beet industry and so forth. Can you tell me how is this public meeting process going to work and how are you going to cover the costs and what would be the format for a public meeting?
Representative Wagenius.
Okay, well, let me start with that. You have listed some of the people who use high volumes of water. But remember, all Minnesotans have a fair share under our law, have a fair share of the water. So if we're talking about extremely high volumes, 250,000 gallons per day on average. So this gives the public who also uses the same groundwater an opportunity to weigh in. Citizens should be able to gather and share information. And this actually goes right back to our basic constitution of the right of assembly. So it's a fairness part of the bill. I'm trying to achieve some balance, even though we're using very, very high volumes of water to trigger that balance.
Representative Fabian, if you could close.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious to know how is DNR is in charge of this? How is DNR going to manage this? And Representative Wagenius has talked about this being some tools for the DNR. I'm curious to know if the DNR wants these tools and can they manage these tools?
Commissioner Meyer, quickly.
Mr. Chairman, members, I do not have a list of the amount of public meetings that this will entail. Maybe Mr. Meckel can provide that to us. But the cost of these public meetings is going to be something we will have to address, and the testing as well. I'm not sure if $50 per test is the right number or not. But we can address those as this bill moves forward into Ways and Means with a fiscal note on the bill if we need to.
Representative Beckerfin renews the A7 motion. Mr. Schwartzwalder, would you please take the roll? Clay, if you could take the roll, please.
Yep. Hansen.
Yes.
Claflin.
Yes.
Fabian.
No.
Backer.
Votes no. Backer votes no.
Yep, Backer votes no. Becker Finn.
Yes.
Eklund.
Yes.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Heintzman. Heintzman votes no. Lee.
Lee votes aye.
Lewick.
No.
Morrison.
Yes.
Nelson.
No.
Purcell.
Aye.
Sandel.
Aye.
Sundin.
Aye.
Tice.
No.
Wagenius.
Yes.
11 ayes, 7 nays.
You need to unmute, Rick.
The A7 amendment is passed. Moving to Representative Becker Finn to move the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the lands bill. There are no changes from the previous version of the lands bill. Would appreciate member support. I know that Representative Fabian has another amendment here, so I will refer members to look at the documents sent out by the CA. Happy to take quick questions, but I do want to make sure we get our work done today.
Members, are there any questions? Representative Becker Finn renews her motion for the A4 amendment. Clay, could you take the roll?
Hansen.
Aye.
Claflin.
Aye.
Fabian.
Aye.
Backer.
Aye.
Becker Finn.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Fisher.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Heintzman. Heintzman. Lee.
Lee votes aye.
Lewick.
Aye.
Morrison.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Purcell.
Aye.
Sandel.
Aye.
Sundin.
Aye.
Tice.
Aye.
Wagenius.
Aye.
Heintzman.
Aye.
18 ayes, 0 nays.
The A4 amendment is adopted. Representative Fabian. Representative Fabian, you're muted. If you could unmute, please.
I'm unmuted. Thank you. I'm just so excited. I've been looking at pictures of my new grandson. So, the A6 amendment is my amendment. What it does is it removes a sunset that was established on a pilot project here in Northwest Minnesota that allowed the leaving of portable deer stands, ladder stands, climbing stand,
hang on stand ground blinds to be left on a WMA during the deer hunting season, provided that you leave your name on it along with the DNR identification number and your address. It's more restrictive than it is on other public lands, state forest lands. It's something that's been very, very widely accepted up here. It's gotten a lot of really positive comments. I've talked to DNR about it, both regionally and the state. And it's something that I think is really a good policy. And I hope that we can continue it. I've talked to a number of members about this, and I appreciate your support.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wanted, for the record, I did talk to Representative Fabian about the amendment ahead of time. And do just want to clarify for the record that the Northwest region of the state, the WMAs there are very large. And so it's kind of a unique situation. And I don't think it's the author's intent, but I certainly wouldn't be my intent that this is kind of a slippery slope to opening up other areas of the state for this way of regulating deer stands. But it's my understanding that this is unique to the Northwestern region of the state. I plan to support the amendment if the author could clarify that piece.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this was a pilot project. If you know where the Red River is, you come east on Highway 1, which goes through Thief River Falls to the east to over just about to Beltrami County slightly, then north up through Waro to the Canadian border. So it's mainly Roseau, Kitson, Marshall, a little bit of Pennington, and a little bit of Beltrami County.
Representative Becker Finn.
Nothing further, Mr. Chair.
I support the amendment. Clay, could you take the roll?
Hanson.
Aye.
Claflin.
Aye.
Fabian.
Aye.
Acker.
Aye.
Becker Finn.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Fisher.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Heintzman.
Aye.
Lee.
Lee votes aye.
Lewick.
Aye.
Morrison.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Purcell.
Aye.
Sandel.
Aye.
Sundin.
Aye.
Tice.
Aye.
Wagenius.
Aye.
18 ayes, 0 nays.
The 86th Amendment is adopted. We will now proceed to the bill as amended. Is there any discussion? I will renew my motion that House File 3657 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Sorry, one sec. All right. Hanson.
Aye.
Claflin. Claflin. Voting on the bill. Aye. Aye. Fabian.
Aye.
Fabian, no.
Backer.
Backer, no.
Becker Finn.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Fisher.
Aye.
Green.
No.
Heintzman.
No.
Lee.
Lee votes aye.
Lewick.
No.
Morrison.
Aye.
Nelson.
No.
Purcell.
Aye.
Sandel. Sandel. I got it. Sandel votes aye. Sundin.
Aye.
Tice.
No.
Wagenius.
Aye.
11 ayes, 7 nays.
Motion is adopted. Members, I'd like to thank you for your participation. I think this was a good hearing. I don't know if we're going to have future hearings. We are obviously in an unprecedented and unique time, but I want to thank you for your professionalism and participation. We are adjourned.